You are listening to a sermon by Barb Nickel, recorded on Sunday, March 14, 2010, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much for having me here. It's just great to be here and see you all again. I invite you to step back from the foot-washing text from John that we heard earlier, to step back from Lent to Christmas, as we've already done with the children's story and the music. To step into the perspective of this meditation and to listen again to the words of the children's Christmas carol that we heard. O come, little children, O come, one and all, to Bethlehem hasten in manger so small. God's Son for a gift has been sent you this night. I invite you to step from your adult world, to shed your years of accumulated responsibilities and cares, and to approach the manger from a lower perspective, to touch the rough wood. Actually pay attention to the way it catches on your fingertip, and then look close up at the tiny face of the baby Jesus. Because you're so low down, say 4 years old, you can see him perhaps at the beginning of a long spit up or crying so hard that his face is all wrinkled and red and it sounds as if there's no tomorrow. There are children who come to the Sardis doorway for single and at-risk mothers and preschool children, where I volunteer doing story time every week, for whom tomorrow means a day with chips for breakfast and going hungry until the doorway snack, or waking up at 2 a.m. to deliver newspapers with their mom, or living with an illiterate, verbally abusive dad in a trailer that has been moved inside a barn with no windows and a junkyard for a backyard. So they're waking up without a speck of light. This last example was the living situation for Tony, a five-year-old boy I've noticed at doorway. And I've noticed he has an especially keen interest in Jesus. Every year at Christmas for story time, I bring our Playmobil nativity set, which is a big hit, complete with, you know, sheep, and the legs actually move. Oh, I thought they were heavy, so that they can graze. And Mary with the removable head covering. It's all just very tangible. They can hold it in their hands and play with it. And tiny baby Jesus you can place in the manger. And I read the Christmas story, and the kids take turns placing the figures into the set, as they did today. And they love it, especially Tony. And one year in January, the first Wednesday back after Christmas, I was all set with my stories about snowmen and January weather. I'd packed everything, all the Christmas stuff up. And Tony walks into the room and just says in his loud, indignant voice, "Where's the baby Jesus?" He was quite ripped off that the baby Jesus wasn't there anymore. Suddenly it was snowmen. And that question has stayed with me to this day. Where's the baby Jesus? Packed up with much relief, on January 2nd, into a box with the other Christmas decorations. Phew, done for another year. Have you ever noticed how rarely the Christmas text is actually read outside the season of Advent and Christmas? We hear it so often during that time. It feels like a relief to file it away with the decorations and move on and replace it with other stories we find harder to make suitable and appealing for children. Jesus in a rage in the temple, turning over the money changers' tables. Jesus allowing a prostitute to wash his feet with her tears and her hair. Or the story we're approaching now. Jesus hanging on the cross, his blood all over the place. This isn't a greeting card talk about keeping the spirit of Christmas, or should I say season, alive throughout the whole year. Nor is it a promotion for introducing talk about prostitution during children's features. But I do want to look at how we might transform that pretty and safe picture of a child approaching the manger to see the baby Jesus into a radical posture and perspective that I've come over a number of years to believe is at the very heart of the Christian journey. Now, Kevin. Another Bible story that makes a perfect children's package, complete with theme rooms, wallpaper, crib mobiles, and all, is the story of Noah's Ark. Children's picture books abound on this subject, and most of them fall into the safe and cute and even adorable category. But this one, by the Dutch children's author and illustrator Peter Speer, really stands out from the cute and safe and adorable Noah's Ark stories. It uses the very, very briefest of texts and tells the story mostly in illustrations, which are exquisitely detailed, showing scenes you wouldn't usually expect to see. For example, there's a picture in here of Noah shoveling manure and gathering eggs on the ark, as well as scenes of devastating tragedy. Could you actually turn it to the one where there's more animals?
Oh.
That one, yeah. So we were driving home from church, and we had just taken this book from the church library, and I think Nicholas must have been about two or three, and he was looking at this illustration in the car. Can people over there see it? I'm probably walking away. He looked at it a long time, and suddenly the other side of the Noah's Ark story became clear to him. As you can see in the illustration, actually on the previous illustration, Noah has closed the doors of the ark. And all now here in this one, all of the animals, the rejected animals, are gathered around it. There's raccoons huddled in the tree. Actually, it's right. Kevin, can you put it to the other one? That one, yeah. You can see there's raccoons huddled in the tree, and the giraffes and the elephants, especially the elephants, are painfully overtaken by water. Now, if you can do the next one. Oh, no, sorry. That one, yeah. Left to drown in the devastation. Now the final one. Nicholas's own tears of compassion began to flow with the floodwaters. There was something so raw and spontaneous about the compassion flowing out of his little body that caused me to think hard and wonder about its wellspring. I have this theory, nursed for many years, about children and God, that they hold a special closeness to the Creator simply because they've had less time away. They're more freshly created than the rest of us, who had a longer separation from the Source. I think of the words from Psalm 139, "My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body. Interestingly, two internationally renowned Canadian women poets who never had their own children have reinforced this idea for me. One is P.K. Page, who died very recently at the age of 93, who said in one interview, "I certainly don't think we began when we emerged from our mother's wombs. We come trailing clouds of glory, or clouds at any rate." One of my favorite poets, Margaret Avison, who died in 2007 at the age of 89, she won the Governor General's Award for her first collection, Winter Sun, in 1960, and converted to Christianity in 1963. Her life thereafter, in and out of poetry, turned always around the Christian story, and much of her poetry deals with overtly Christian themes. She is thought of as a metaphysical poet and has been compared to the poet George Herbert, and interestingly often features children as key players, as in the short poem Bereaved, which is in your bulletin. And this poem actually closes one of her collections. I'll just give you, just before we have it read, just give you a little heads up on the word typical of Margaret Avison. She'll just throw into her poems a reference, and she's so economical. So instead of saying that is an ancient Sumerian city that has lots of excavations, especially of royal tombs, just puts there and expects the reader to go out and meet the poem. Another interesting word that she uses there is barbarous, the barbarous tongue of the children, and I was thinking of that as that sort of raw, coarse, not refined feeling for the children, for their voices. So if we could have, I think someone's going to be reading.
Yeah, Helga.
The children's voices. All red and blue and green in pure April dimness. Just as an at dusk under the walls, our barbarous tongue lost on that undiluted, inured, that thumping thing, the heavy adult heart. The children's voices are the immemorial chorus.
Children, and even lowlier beings, tiny things you wouldn't normally notice, loom large in Avison's poetry, well known for its zoom lens precision and for its attention to small detail, like the first scilla in spring, the young ant bent for somewhere. These are from different poems that she's written, or photomicrographs of crystals. And it is here in this realm of dust motes, crumbs from the table, bugs, that lowly place where children crawl and where Jesus slept when he first arrived as a human on this planet, that serves as a setting for today's scripture passage. And if we could hear that again, John 13, 3 to 8.
Lisa Dawn has gone to.
Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me."
I'm working on a series of poems inspired by biblical passages, and spent much time last summer contemplating this passage in terms of its words and its gestures and its roots. Now, the first thing I did after thinking about the passage for a long time was look up the word foot in an etymology dictionary. For those of you who don't know, etymologies are not definitions, An etymology dictionary, as an introduction to one put it, is a map of the wheel ruts of modern English. And the entries are explanations of what our words meant and how they sounded 600 or 2,000 years ago. So looking up the etymology of foot was a very productive process. And interestingly, the first word of interest to show up was pawn, or a lowly chess piece, from 1369, traced back to the medieval Latin, I should get Evan to help me here, pedonym, I don't know if I have that right, for foot soldier. Also, peon showed up from Mexican Spanish, an agricultural laborer, especially a debtor held in servitude by his creditor, also originally from foot soldier. Also, fetter, from the Old English, meaning a chain or shackle for the feet. And, interestingly, expedite, from the Latin expeditus, meaning to make fit or ready, to prepare, literally to free the feet from fetters, hence liberate from difficulties. So tracing the journey of that one word, foot, led to all of these rich associations that just seem to surround the figure of Christ on his knees with his hand on the sole of a disciple's foot. I found all of those things, all of those words related. I also looked up soul, S-O-L-E, soul, which led to more interesting discoveries, like its root in solum, meaning bottom, ground, soil. And I also connected soul to its homophone, the other soul, S-O-U-L, soul, which my dictionary describes as the spiritual part of a human being. And in the midst of all of this, looking up the words and the roots, a memory image came to me. As a child of about 10 or 11, one of my favorite rituals was to get up on the bathroom counter. And we actually had a little sliding out thing that you could pull to sort of so that no one could get in. We didn't have a lock on the door, but it had this little sliding out thing so that no one could get in. And one of my favorite rituals was to get up on the bathroom counter and run a basin of warm water and wash my feet. And I took a long time cleaning all of the accumulated grime, especially in the summer, from between each toe and examining the various scrapes and calluses, as well as two plantar warts on the sole of one foot. Well, there was the first line of my poem. And if you want to take out the poem, it's in your bulletin. It's called Feet. And it begins with the epigraph, Jesus poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet. Plantar wart on my soul. Yielded. So that image, that tangible image of seeing the plantar warts on my feet as I was, as a child, washing my feet, yielded a deeper meaning, and that was the sin of my S-O-U-L soul as well. So that stain on the sole of my foot was actually the sin of my soul, S-O-U-L. As well, all those grimy things and places Jesus calls us to look at. The deep, painful, secret places inside of ourselves that we wish would just go away. I think of the times when my young children have taken the time to examine a ladybug or a blade of grass, and I've been in such a rush that I've wrenched them away. But what if I actually took the time to examine my soul, S-O-U-L, soul, with this kind of deep, and steadfast attention? What would I see? What did the disciples see inside themselves that night Jesus knelt at their feet? Betrayal, neglect, corruption. Enough to make them want to flee, or enough so that Peter didn't want Jesus to wash his feet at all. When I was writing the poem, the image of a plantar wart looking like a shoal, which I was thinking of like a submerged sandbank visible sort of at high tide, led me by its similar sound to the Old Testament Hebrew word sheol, the underworld, hell, the place of the dead, which in turn led me to Psalm 139, beginning at verse 7 until verse 12. And I think someone is going to read that.
Yes, should that be verse 1?
Oh, sorry, 1 to 18. It's such a beautiful psalm, I thought we'd just hear the whole thing.
Yeah, Doug is going to read that.
O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest when I sit down and when I rise up. Thou discernest my thoughts from afar. Thou searchest out my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, Lord, O Lord, thou knowest it all together. Thou dost beset me behind me and before, and layest thy hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend to heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in Sheol, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there thy hand shall lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, let only darkness cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to thee. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with thee. For thou didst from my inward parts, thou didst knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise thee, for thou art fearful and wonderful. Wonderful art thy works. Thou knowest me right well. My frame was not hidden from thee. When I was being made in secret, intricately wrought in the depths of the earth, thy eyes beheld my unformed substance, in thy book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. How precious to me art thy thoughts, O God! How vast is the sum of them! If I would count them, they are more than the sand. When I awake, I am still with thee.
Simon is actually going to read a children's version of this song.
God, you know me so well. You always know what I'm thinking and feeling. You know what I'm going to say before I say it. Even in the night, you can see me. You know my secrets. You know my fear. I praise you for making me who I am.
Where can I go? That became the third line of my poem, taken directly from that beautiful song. Where can I go? To where can my feet, held and washed by my Creator, flee? I wrote over hot stones, hot sand, to the rim, to anywhere. But then came the answer, and also from the song. But there is here, behind, before, all. God is everywhere that our feet can take us, calling us home. I imagined Jesus examining the calluses on his disciples' feet, worn hard from much travel. And that came the next line, these calluses. And thought of Jesus' story of the prodigal son, which we heard earlier. And that was actually, I just found out this week, that was actually a lectionary scripture. But in fact, I mentioned it in the talk, and that's what I thought of in this poem. Evan, did you want to, should we sing that story again? I always like to hear people at Point Grace sing, so if you will indulge me.
Number 531.
Thank you. And you'll find my poem version of that story in just about the middle of the poem, where it says, fungal toes in the mud, which was my nickname for the prodigal child, because besides having plantar warts, I also have this impossible to get rid of fungal infection on my toenail, despite like expensive treatments, and you can't take when you're breastfeeding and having children. So anyway, it's a long story, but I still have this horrible fungal infection in my toenail. So that's what inspired Fungal Toes in the Mud, which was my nickname for the prodigal child. Fungal Toes in the Mud blows it. After the funeral, and I imagined the story, the funeral, who would the funeral be for? A gang member murdered in a fight, or a parent with whom one has never reconciled, or a neglected child one has never taken the time to find and help. For we've all blown it, have all been prodigal sons and daughters at different times in our lives. So after the funeral hauls off to, and could be anywhere. And then the next line is the concerned parent calling long distance. And I kept it as an open blank because I think it could be filled with a number of words to make a number of different questions. Who are you now? What are you now? Where are you now? At the time of putting this meditation together, I came to this point in my talk with some frustration, asking myself, where are you now from your opening? How far have you strayed from your focus at the beginning, which was about children approaching the manger and seeing Jesus close up? About that question, where's the baby Jesus? About children and their closeness to God? About Avison's insistence in her poetry on small things somehow being a crucial turning point, and even in the Christian story. But wait a minute. Perhaps not so far off after all. For aren't the manger and the basin of water one and the same? The identical gesture by God, that junction where the whole universe, creator of the moon, stars, the galaxies, is a tiny child, weak and vulnerable and spitting up, or way down low with the lowliest of the low, a foot soldier, knees in the very soil of this earth, kneeling as a pawn or an indebted servant, his fingers finding the grime between our toes. How do we then respond, confounded by this greatest of mysteries? What is then required of us as wayward and straying children of God to find our way home? Jesus says later in the passage from John, "Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet." May we accept God's magnificent gift of servitude, his hand on the soles of our feet, as tears of thankfulness swell up and flow down the bridges of our noses. And in this moment of grace, may we turn our feet in the direction of the manger. In all humility, find the stance of children and kneel there, knowing this is our home. By the smallest and the weakest and the most vulnerable, this is where we need to be. This home we share with the creator of the universe. So we are never alone. I'm just going to read my poem with the help of Evan Jennings. Feet. Jesus poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet.
Plantar wart on my soul. Well, shoal, Sheol? Where can I go? Over hot stones, hot sand, to the rim, to... But there is here, behind, before, all...
These calluses.
Fungal toes in the mud, blows it. After the funeral, hauls off to...
Where are you?
Where the stars kneel, calling between my toes, and gentle water over my bridge goes. And I'm alone.